$1.6 trillion. That's how much the federal student loan debt is right now. $1.6 trillion. Can you even fathom that amount of money? I mean, I'm having trouble imagining it myself. That's spread out over 43 million borrowers, which means the average debt load per borrower is over $37,000. It's not a secret that student loans have been a major marker of how the millennial generation, my generation, and younger sees finances. Now, I did graduate with some student loan debt myself, but fortunately, my wife and I got really focused soon after graduating, and we were able to pay it off relatively quickly. But people struggle with this. I mean, I know friends and family who struggle with this. It's not unheard of for students who get advanced degrees, such as in law, in medicine, or pharmacy, to borrow literally hundreds of thousands of dollars to get their degrees. Now, this is a complicated topic, and there are entire podcasts dedicated to talking about student loans. That's not what I'm trying to do here, but I just want to point out that where there are big problems, there are big opportunities. Today's company has sought to fight the student loan crisis by using creative solutions and has expanded into much, much more. Welcome to Stock Stories. All right. Welcome to the Stock Stories Podcast. My name is Alex Mason, and I am your host and stock storyteller. On this show, we decode the business behind the stock in order to help you make better investing decisions. We also learn about mental models and investing principles in order to complement stock analysis. So yes, thank you for joining me today. This is another show of Stock Stories, and we're going to keep going through the companies. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate your time, your attention. You could be listening to so many other podcasts, but right now you're choosing to listen to this. So thank you. I value your time and I appreciate you. And today we're going to be going through another company. And this company happens to not be in the S&P 500. This was a company that was suggested actually by you, by one of the listeners. So thank you for suggesting this company. And we're going to get into an interesting company in the financial space that I think is doing some interesting things. I first heard about it years ago, but never really paid much attention until now. It actually just recently went public. So thanks for suggesting it. If you have more suggestions for companies, let me know. Send me a DM in Instagram at Stock Storyteller. I'm also on Twitter at Stock Storyteller without the letter O's. Just the character limit was a little bit much there. But you can find me on Instagram or Twitter, or you can email me alex@stockstoriespodcast.com. Send me your suggestions. I want to know what companies that you want to learn about, so that I can research them and create my own episodes for you about those companies. So without further ado, let's talk about SoFi Technologies. SoFi Technologies, ticker symbol SOFI. Now, many business ideas and successful startups have emerged from Stanford's Graduate School of Business. And if you're not familiar with them, they're rated as the top business school in the country alongside Harvard Business School. Now, in 2011, there were some business students working on a new idea. Their names were Dan Macklin, Mike Cagney, James Finnegan, and Ian Brady, and they envisioned a new way for students to finance their loans. They saw that their peers were really smart people, really talented, well-employed, but when they went to business school, they had to take out loans at something like 7, 8, or even 9% interest. And they just thought, there's got to be a better way to do this. These people are clearly creditworthy. We've got to find a way to make the loan process easier, make financing school easier for these creditworthy students. And so Social Finance started out as a loan program for Stanford students. What they wanted to do was provide more affordable options for students who were taking out a loan for their education. At the time, 93% of student loans originated from the government. And I just looked at the most recent numbers. In 2021, they still account for about the same percentage of that market in terms of dollars. So the vast majority of student loans in America, yeah, they come from the federal government. The initial idea for the business came from one of the founders, Mike Cagney, who was previously a head trader at Wells Fargo. He believed that students would be more likely to get loans at better terms, and lenders would be more likely to back them if the lenders were alumni of the schools where the students were attending. And this kind of makes sense, right? People are more likely to support other people who are going to their same institution, because there's this sense of school pride. And at the end of the day, schools, especially the elite universities, they want to preserve their image and their clout when it comes to the allure of the career opportunities and the returns that they can generate for their students. This was a unique twist from what the federal government and other lenders were offering at the time. The SoFi team decided to run a pilot program with Stanford to prove out the concept. So they raised funds from Stanford alumni and paired them up with student borrowers who were also from Stanford. It was called the Community Loan Program, and they were successful. They were able to raise over $2 million and serve 100 students. Then came the next step. SoFi expanded the program to 40 different universities this time, and then in 2012, they raised $150 million. Now, students were happy because they were getting funds for their education at below market rates. And alumni were happy because they were able to get some financial return on their money while helping out their alma mater. It was a win-win. Investors in this program were effectively buying bonds and getting around 5 to 8% on their money. Now remember, if you're investing in something like a bond, which you might hear other terms like loans or notes, whatever you want to call it, that means you're buying debt. So instead of a stock where you benefit from the company's increase in profits, you're benefiting from money being paid back to you with interest. One unique thing to note about SoFi is that because they started out with a very specific pool of borrowers, which were students from top academic institutions, their default rate was very low, at less than 1%. In fact, I heard an interview with one of the founders, and they said that within the first 6,000, no, it was the first 60,000 borrowers, only 5 defaulted, and 4 of those unfortunately passed away. So there was really only one person who actually defaulted on their loans in that pool of 60,000. And just so you know, in the credit world, that is incredibly good. I mean, the default rate on a typical pool of loans at, say, a Bank of America or Wells Fargo is definitely going to be higher than that, because you have a much broader pool of borrowers, and it's just pretty interesting how there's a difference there. But I mean, let's think about it. Let's say a Stanford or MIT graduate is off and they want to go back to school. Well, they're probably more likely to get a good paying job and pay off their loans than someone who went to just a typical state school or a community college. because there's a higher demand typically in the job markets for those types of graduates. So we can see that there's this symbiotic relationship going on between the students and their schools and the school's alumni. It's kind of this self-contained network, and SoFi began to act as the facilitator of this refinancing and lending system. From there, SoFi kept growing as its business model was proving to be legitimate. They raised over $77 million in funding by the end of 2012, and then the next year in 2013, they raised another $200 million to lend to over 2,500 students. Now by 2015, the company attracted millions of more dollars from institutional and private investors, and they were able to expand their product offerings to all sorts of different types of loans, such as personal loans, and then they got into mortgages too. They ran into some trouble though. They had to deal with the Federal Trade Commission in 2018 because they were making some exaggerated claims about how much money they could save students. I mean, money is a tricky thing, and advertising related to money matters should be handled with care. The company had to quickly reel back its marketing programs because they inflated their projected numbers about how much people could save. I mean, yeah, their marketing department probably got a little bit excited about trying to spread the word, and they got hit with some issues with the FTC. SoFi got back on its feet though. Some of the leaders of the company left and were replaced, and the company went into its next phase. They continued to expand, and they kept attracting new customer and institutional funding. Now, as early as this year in 2021, the company went public, and they did it by merging with a SPAC, or Special Purpose Acquisition Corporation. Remember those? We talked about them a few weeks ago in an episode. Essentially, it's a blank check company, or a company that exists legally but doesn't actually do anything. By merging with one of these companies, which in this case was run by billionaire Chamath Palihapitiya, SoFi was able to quickly go public as opposed to going through the longer and more complex process for a traditional initial public offering. Now, I suspect that regulators will eventually have to make the IPO process easier, because otherwise companies are just going to continue to use this method to go public and raise money simply because it seems easier for them. Anyway, let's talk about the business now, the business overview. So up until now, SoFi is not a bank. Now they have a lot of products and services that are morphing closer and closer to a bank type model, but technically they're not a bank. So SoFi states their mission as to help people reach financial independence to realize their ambitions. That is their stated mission. So they're very focused on kind of this optimistic, this very ambitious person who wants to be financially independent. And they want to help those people by giving them all these different products. They want to give them loans, they want to give them investment products. And also the company has expanded so much now, it's not like they just serve alumni of top schools. They also lend money to a lot of other people, really to everyone. But they do focus more on higher income, credit-worthy borrowers and consumers, particularly in my generation, which is the millennial generation, and also Gen Z. And they do a lot more than lending. They're basically a fully fledged financial services firm. SoFi has several branches of its business now. They have lending, and that means they have loans of all types. You can get your mortgage there, your auto loan, student loans, and personal loans too. They have an investing side of the business, so you can buy stock, you can buy crypto, etc. There's an insurance side, which is interesting. You can buy homeowners insurance from there, life insurance. And then they have a spending arm. And in that arm of the business, they recently launched a credit card, and that credit card works with MasterCard's network. So you can have your SoFi credit card if you want. In my view, this company is really like a modern bank. They focus on technology from the get-go, and they compete directly with traditional banks that sell products like mortgages with traditional insurers too, who sell things like renter's insurance or house insurance. So what makes SoFi different? What is it about them that would make us want to consider potentially investing in them? I mean, for me, when I research this company, I see two main differences. First, they're really a tech company that happens to focus on finance. This is an important point. It's an emerging area called fintech. Now, they're not like large traditional banks who have to hire teams of technology experts to continually upgrade their systems and fit that into their existing banking business. No, this is a company that grew up and is maturing in Silicon Valley. It was started by technologists. In 2020, they also reaffirmed their focus on tech by paying over $1.2 billion for this company called Galileo. Now, Galileo is a payment processor for businesses, and they also do things like launch custom debit and credit card programs. So they have this technology platform, and SoFi's already used them to integrate them with their financial services. Second, they don't use traditional underwriting techniques for loans. It seems like they use a different approach. Now, although they've expanded beyond student loans into other products, they still have taken an unconventional approach to lending. You see, unlike traditional banks, SoFi isn't quite as interested in what your credit score is. Credit scores are traditionally used by pretty much every major financial institution in order to determine a person's credit worthiness. That is, how likely they are to pay back a loan based on past experiences with debt. Now, there's a lot of factors that go into someone's credit score, including how much debt they've owed in the past, if they paid it off in a timely manner, all sorts of things. Other types of bills like utility bills in your home, that can also contribute to your credit score. Now, SoFi used to not look at someone's credit score, but now it is taken into account too in lending decisions. Their big innovation though is looking specifically at free cash flow. Now, though this is an investing in business term, you can apply it to personal finance too. So let me explain what I mean. In a business, free cash flow is the amount of money a business has left over after paying all of its expenses. It's kind of like profit, but a little bit more of a clear metric because it accounts for things like capital expenditures and research and development that a company has to spend in order to maintain its competitive advantage. Now let's apply this to a person. Let's say that you have a job, you have a house, a car, and a student loan. And you've got debt on the house, which is a mortgage, you've got debt on the car, and you've got student loan debt. Now, some of your cash flow that you earn from your job, it's already spoken for because of those payments you have to make. You have to make minimum payments on the car, on the house, and on the loan. So your ability to refinance or borrow more money is dependent on the amount of quote unquote free cash flow that you have left to pay on your debt. So if you wanted to get out of debt more quickly than the original loan term and just use more of your income to pay it off, well, that's dependent on how much more money you have above your minimum payments. That's like excess, right? The amount that you have that you could use if you wanted to wipe out the balance. And so that has a relation to how SoFi sees your credit worthiness and how they see you as a customer or a potential customer. Now, so far, SoFi has refinanced about $30 billion in student loans, and that seems huge, but honestly, it's a mere fraction of the total amount of existing student loans in America, and more debt is being borrowed every day. So this is a really big market that SoFi is playing in, and a lot of other companies are trying to play in too. Now, it should come as no surprise that there's a ton of competition in the lending industry and just financial services in general. There's dozens of banks and lending companies just waiting to refinance borrowers' debt, as well as loan them new funds for purchases big and small, like a house, a car, or an education. Now, in studying SoFi, it seems like they have competitive rates. I went ahead and did a quick search to try to find out, okay, what are the rates actually like? And I saw, for example, you can get a fixed rate on a student loan as low as 2%, if you have great credit and presumably a lot of free cash flow in your personal budget. So, okay, that's competitive. Aside from the competitive rates, it seems like SoFi may have an edge when it comes to technology. I mean, they are a tech company based in Silicon Valley after all, so their sleek design, I imagine, would appeal to millennial and Gen Z consumers. They have an app that really seeks to be the one-stop shop for finances, especially for high-income earners, people who make over $100,000 a year. And a lot of banks are trying to do this exact same thing, but based on the data, they're not succeeding that well. For example, I learned that 50% of Americans use more than one bank for their financial services. And actually, my family is one of them. I get it. It's not always the smartest idea or most convenient idea to have all of your financial services with a single bank. For example, my family, we have some money with, I guess I'll call it our main bank, and then we have other money with our brokerage account, which we use to buy stocks. So those aren't the same companies, and there are reasons for that. You know, it might not be as convenient on one platform versus another. Some services may specialize a little bit more. So there's room for multiple financial institutions to occupy effectively someone's wallet. And then also, I also learned that the 10 biggest legacy banks in America, they hold only about 50% of the bank accounts that are currently in existence. So, hey, even with the big guys, there's a lot of room for disruption here. And I also saw that SoFi is showing some signs of success. I mean, they've got $30 million in revenue from recent home mortgage loans. And then of those loans, 65% or more came from existing SoFi customers. So it seems like they've got at least some ability to cross-market their products. Why is this important? Well, you get economies of scale when you can sell multiple products to one person. They're not running over to bank number one for a mortgage, bank number two for their checking account, on and on and on like that. Now, this is all well and good, but what do the numbers look like? Let's take a look at SoFi's financials. All right, I'm looking at SoFi's financials right now, and because they are a relatively new company, I mean, they just went public this year in 2021, there's not a ton of easily accessible data on them. I did do some digging, but the main data that we're going to look at right now is just the first 6 months of 2021, the most recent data available. So let's see what we can find out about this business. Well, first, let's look at sales. In the first half of 2021, this is a company that made over $420 million in sales. So they already have a pretty good revenue base. They're gaining traction pretty quickly. And then as far as net income in the first half of the year, they lost $340 million. So not profitable. But, consider this. I looked a little bit more closely at their income statement, and they actually tripled their general and administrative costs in just 1 year. So looking at the first half of 2020 versus the first half of 2021, they increased those costs alone by over $200 million. So it's not like this is a business that is just like absolutely losing money because they're not successful. They're losing money because they're investing heavily into growing faster. And then of course, earnings per share, this is -2. It's a -$1.50 per share. And then looking at the balance sheet, let's see what we've got here. As of mid-2021, SoFi had $700 million in cash. So decent cash position here. And their debt, they had about $2.3 billion. Okay, not too bad, especially for a financial company. Financial companies tend to have a decent amount of debt on their balance sheet because they basically operate, their whole business model is based on leverage. And then looking at the cash flow statement, what do we have here? We see that the operating cash flow, which is the amount of money that the actual business operations are making, is $82 million. And so that's a positive number. That means that this is a company that does indeed generate cash. And it looks like they're just kind of turning the corner here as far as going from unprofitable to profitable. As far as investing cash flow, yeah, they've got over $200 million invested in the business, so they're definitely in the expansion phase. And their financing cash flow is actually over $870 million put into the business. Now, what does this mean? This means that they're paying off a lot of debt, actually. They raised over $2 million from their business combination earlier this year, but then they went around and paid a net amount of about $2.5 million on their debt. So that's where that number comes from. And then their shares outstanding, they've got almost 800 million shares outstanding, and they do not pay a dividend. They're definitely a high growth company. So those are the financials in a quick snapshot. Now, the financial landscape is changing rapidly as technology becomes more deeply embedded in the financial services industry. So I want to take a couple of minutes just to synthesize the information that we've learned so far and to kind of find out what is going on with this business. Let's kind of put it together. Now, SoFi seems well positioned to take market share away from smaller players, and it seems focused on more creditworthy borrowers than your typical bank. Again, their main customer makes over $100,000 per year and is someone who's looking for an all-in-one solution with their money. Now, the finances from the recent IPO, they're still kind of messy. I kind of had to wade through some documents, but there are numbers worth taking notice of. Now, this is a company that is growing rapidly. For example, in 2021, management is expecting $980 million in revenue for the full fiscal year. Now, compare that to 2018 revenue of just $240 million. That's an annual growth rate of nearly 60%. This is a company that's growing really fast. And then the snapshot of the numbers in the most recently quarterly report that I looked at, they don't really do the company justice until you look at them in the context of trends over time. For example, this Galileo platform that I mentioned earlier, they've gone from 19 million accounts in early 2019 to over 79 million accounts in late 2021. So that's four times growth in just 2 years. That's like quadrupling, literally. And then the thing about this subsidiary is they're contributing to the bottom line because they have technology fee revenue too. So this is a company that doesn't just make money from fees on loans. They are making money from technology services. They're also a tech company. And in fact, I would argue that they are just in general a tech company that just happens to use that technology to get into finances. Now let's talk about membership really briefly. At the beginning of 2019, SoFi had 700,000 members, so a pretty good pool of members. Now at the end of 2021, and we're not even at the end of the year yet, they have 2.5 million. They have definitely more than tripled their membership in just 2 years. So that's pretty incredible. Shows you that this is something that is really taking off for them. Let's talk about profitability and valuation now. From the financial perspective, I want to make one more point before talking about valuation, actually. This is a young tech company that's actually flirting with profitability, and you can see the light here. I mean, a lot of times when I study growth companies that especially are tech companies, their revenue growth is amazing, but they're not even close to making profits for their shareholders yet. Now, in 2021, SoFi actually does expect to make profits with about $27 million in pre-tax earnings. Now, that's not a lot compared to their revenue, but it is trending in the right direction for sure. And management's forecasts are aggressive, but I see that they're in line with the historical growth that the company has delivered on in the past couple of years. In 2025, SoFi's management expects over $3.5 billion in revenue and over $1 billion in profit. Now, what does that mean for us as prospective shareholders? Like, it's good to see these numbers as projections, but how do we actually translate that? Well, here's what we can do. If we assume that the share count stays the same at around 800 million shares or so, we can divide these theoretical future earnings by the number of shares to get a hypothetical earnings per share in 2025. All right, now stay with me. So if you divide that number which is exactly 1.1 billion. That's a projection. The shares outstanding is 794 million. You divide those out, you get $1.38 per share. So 4 years from now in 2025, we could expect, if management meets expectations, that the business will earn $1.38 per share in profit. Okay, fair enough, right? Now, we have to apply some kind of multiplier to this. How do we think the market is going to value this business? I just went ahead here and assumed a price-to-earnings ratio of 15, which I think seems pretty reasonable for a typical bank, especially for a financial company, or really a tech company, which I really think the business is. So that means the company could be valued at $20 or $21 per share 4 years from now. So this is kind of interesting because the stock IPO'd actually around that price earlier this summer, but the stock has fallen since then. The stock now sits at around $15 per share. So to me, that's about a 25% upside if things work out well. But hold up, wait a minute. We have to put this in context in terms of time too. How long do we have to wait to get our returns as investors? That matters. Now, if we spread this return out over 4 years, we're looking at about a 10% annual rate of return. So, okay, I don't think SoFi is super undervalued in the medium term, but I do see tremendous potential when we look 7 to 10 years out. This is not a company that has the potential to grow 10 years. This is not a company that has the potential to grow 10% per year for the next few years and then just kind of fizzle out into a slow growth rate. This is a company that has the potential to actually accelerate their growth and take even more market share because they're still small enough to grow fast. And this is, like I said, a tech company that happens to be in the finance industry, and their Galileo subsidiary, they don't even just serve financial industries. They serve non-financial industries as their customers too. So I think that there's something valuable there. So this is a company that's still pretty fresh off of its IPO, but I've got it on my watch list for sure. And I definitely like the growth, and the price doesn't seem too rich given the potential of this market and where SoFi seems to be leading the next wave of fintech products. Fintech is definitely a growing industry and something that I am taking a closer look at. So that's my opinion on SoFi Technologies. Really interesting company, really interesting economics, and they're getting into this market that is definitely being disrupted. I mean, the big banks, they're trying really hard to keep their customers now because that brand loyalty to traditional banks like Wells Fargo, Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, they're trying to keep that because these newer players are coming in. And those who are more adept at technology, I think, will ultimately have the edge. And SoFi seems like a powerful contender. Hey, thanks so much for listening to the Stock Stories podcast. I'm your host and stock storyteller, Alex Mason. This show was written and produced by me. Sound design done by the incredibly talented Janelle Leon. And also, thank you to the lovely Selenia Caraveo for helping keeping things running smoothly behind the scenes. If you enjoyed this episode, consider sharing it with a friend. The way that this show grows is if you like it and you like it enough to tell people about it. So let's work together to help other investors learn about great businesses and buy stocks smarter. Now, if you like this episode and want even more, maybe you want to listen to all of the stocks in the archive, or you want bonus content such as episodes on stocks that are not in S&P 500, consider joining Stock Stories Premium. This is where I put my absolute best investment ideas and thinking, and where we explore more companies. Check it out by clicking the link in the show notes. So thanks in advance for sharing the show and considering becoming a premium subscriber. I really appreciate it. So until next time, what's your stock story?